Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Yes, well, let's bring on Catherine Roberts. She is our guest tonight, and she has spent nearly 25 years as an evangelical fundamental Christian, most of those years being in some form of ministry and eventually becoming an ordained pastor. In 2018, after a long period of deconstructing from her fundamentalist beliefs, she made a skeptical examination of the evidence for the existence of God. And today, she calls herself an atheist and a freethinker. So, Catherine, welcome to RFRX. I'm so glad you're here with us today. And you're coming all the way from way out on the other side of North American continent.
Yeah. Well, I'm really happy to be here, Eric. Thank you so much. It's so nice to see so many people, too. It's great. I'm over on the east coast of Canada. I'm in a very tiny little fishing village in Newfoundland.
We're here to talk about rebuilding when our foundation kind of crumbles. So where would we start? Where do you want to start with this?
I got a bit of experience with starting all over again. I must say I've lived in 5 of the Canadian provinces, and I've moved almost 30 times in 30 years.
Jeez.
Yeah. A lot of people ask me if I'm in the military, but no, I just married a man with ADHD and he likes to travel. So we've moved all over. I'd like to be able to start and tell you about the time when I'm going to gloss over a whole lot of this story, obviously, but my husband and I found ourselves homeless back in 2000 and something. I don't even remember now. I'd have to stop and do the math. We had been ripped off by somebody from our church in a Ponzi scheme, and we lost our home, our vehicle. Wow. We lost everything. We ended up being homeless for a couple of weeks. And the way things worked out, we got a job the last minute. I mean, we had no money. We were already eating once a day. It was pretty wild. But, you know, so we got a job that provided housing, which, you know, saved us from being homeless. But we had nothing when we started there. That was in 2008, actually. And I remember landing in this farmhouse in southern Saskatchewan with nothing. And we had been married for over 20 years at the time. And so we had accumulated all kinds of stuff. And here we were. I was sitting. We didn't even have a cup to have tea in. We had nothing. Somebody loaned us 2 lawn chairs to sit on and an air mattress. So I woke up one morning, sat in the lawn chair, and I realized this is really, really starting over, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think about that often when I think about my own deconversion, because that's almost how I felt when I realized that I no longer believed in God. I felt like I had nothing left. I was just sitting and wondering, what do I do next? And so it's been quite a process for me. I was a Christian since I was 28 until I was almost 50, and in the ministry for most of those years. So realizing that I no longer believed in God was just like losing everything and starting over again.
Wow, that's a really interesting analogy that you used there. I like how you described that. Obviously, that's a horrible situation you went through. I'm sorry to hear that. But that really resonates with me, that feeling of, okay, I've completely abandoned this system, but I spent the whole time in that system ignoring and specifically not trying to take on other beliefs that were contrary to that belief system. And then you're starting over.
I, I certainly didn't set out to, I never thought I'd be an atheist. Never. If somebody told me a few years ago, you know, that I'd be an atheist today, I would have just laughed at them. But I became an atheist trying to be the best Christian that I could possibly be. I mean, I just studied myself right the hell out of it. I don't know. you know, but it was a very, it was almost like a rude awakening for me. I was okay with the deconstruction part of losing a lot of those toxic doctrines. But when I really examined the God belief and realized that I didn't have any a good reason to stand on it, it was just like my my world fell apart.
Yeah, the whole kind of foundation just like I feel like I experienced not the exact same thing, but like emotionally kind of went through something similar, and where I was felt like I was on shifting sand and no longer a solid rock foundation. It was something completely out of left field and unexpected. I can imagine you weren't prepared for it, and I sure as heck wasn't prepared for it either.
No. It was kind of like a house of cards. It was so strange that my whole life and everything that I devoted my life to and everything I believed just kind of collapsed in a moment. And I was really lost. And this is why I'm so absolutely honored to be on this show tonight, because recovering from religion was the first resource that my husband and I found.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Because we had no clue. We didn't know another atheist. The only people we knew were born again, spirit filled, charismatic, non-denominational, holy rollers. So, you know, I was truly lost and didn't know how to.
Yeah.
It is like a death. And that's, you know, the first thing that I found was that I had to understand and that it was a process, and it is like a grieving process. I actually was a recipient of that secular therapy project, which, I mean, if I think about it too much, I may cry. That's how life-changing it was. That's how life-changing it was for me, because it was my entire, my faith was my identity. It was my reasoning patterns. It was how I thought. It was the center of everything that I did and said. And, you know, so, you know, when it was gone, I needed therapy. And one of the things I learned in the therapy was that it is a process very similar to the grief process. I experienced the exact steps that people go through when they lose a loved one, because in a sense, and this is kind of complicated, but in a sense you have lost someone, but at the same time, it's someone who wasn't really there. And there's like a disconnect there. My husband's, therapist, which was, Daryl Ray, I think it was, or he was talking to Daryl Ray, and he said, you know, my husband was saying, but you know, I've lost this. And he said, no, you've never had it. Mm. And so, but the grief is still the same. I mean, I went through shock and denial. I went through pain and depression, anger, the guilt and shame, all of the steps of grief I went through. And eventually I came out the other side, you know? So that would be my first advice to anybody who's finding themselves in the situation that I was. And I realized that to a lot of people, their faith in God or their religion is really not, it's kind of an add-on to their life, you know? And so they may not experience this to the extent that I did. But I know that there's a lot of people out there who, you know, who this will relate to. I'm sure of it. So the grief process, the first thing I went through was shock and denial. I don't know how long it took me to say that I was an atheist, but I went through that shock and denial and no one to talk to. So the resources that are available online, just amazing. There's so many good ones out there. RFR being, you know, one of them, but there are a lot of really great resources out there for anybody who is going through it. The pain and depression was next. Oh, that was, I suffer with depression. I've suffered with depression all my life. And so this depression, this was completely different. But I actually, you know, and I would encourage anyone to do this. I went on medication. I went to see my doctor, and that was a big deal for me because for 20 something years, it was seen as a failure, a lack of faith to not just go see a doctor or get counseling, but to go on medication. So I suffered many years with untreated depression because of it. And there's no shame in it. If there's anybody who's listening who feels like, you know, they when you're depressed, there's no shame in getting help. I take other medication for other things, right? I mean, you know, lots of us take blood pressure medication and, you know, we don't feel shame over that. So.
Yeah, that's the exact same thing I went through too. I've struggled with depression my whole life as well. And it took when it hit me that I no longer believed in supernatural, I fell into a 4-year long depression, and it took a long time before I was okay with, hey, let's get some medication for this. And yeah, it's been much, much better now that I finally allowed myself to, it was a struggle at first finding the right medication and then finding the right dose. But once that work was done, it's been well worth it ever since. And I kind of grew up similar where, hey, this is all in your head. And so if it's in your head, you should be able to fix it. And that's just not even true, not even close to being true. I can really relate to what you're saying and what you went through.
Yeah. My family doctor talked me into going into taking the medication. And he said, if they work, you'll know in a week. And so I said, okay, I'll try it for a week. And on day 8, I woke up and I was like, oh, this is what it's like to have my own brain. This is what it's like to be able to think clearly and not have clouds in your, it was unbelievable. It was almost unbelievable. And so I know, I mean, the first time I was on antidepressants, I had no idea I was going to talk about this, but, the first time I was on antidepressants, I was 18. So, I know that for me, I'll probably be on them forever, which is fine. If my brain, it has the, a chemical imbalance, and I'll correct it that way. So I'm as happy as anything now. I haven't had a depressive episode one day since I started my medication. And that is fucking huge for me. It's huge. Wow. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
And then the angry stage, you know, atheists do get a bad rap for being angry. And I got to tell you, I definitely went through the angry atheist stage. I don't know how many of you did, but yeah, well, I was pissed. I mean, once my head was on straight, I was fucking pissed. Yeah. I wasted 24 years of my life on fairy tales and magical thinking. And, you know, from 28 to 49, I didn't taste whiskey till I was 50. you know, I mean, I never watched, you guys were talking about Star Wars earlier. I never watched Star Wars. I hardly read a secular book a secular book in over two decades.
Except for 50 Shades of Grey, right? You read that, I'm sure. I heard like so many.
That have been one that I read for sure then.
Yeah, the same thing here. I went through an angry atheist phase and probably lost quite a few friends turned some of my family members sour. There were a lot of loving people who were there for me and tried to talk sense into me, but I felt so angry. I felt lied to.
Yeah.
But it's not something like I couldn't pin this. Who lied to me? Exactly. My parents were just kind of raised to do this, so on and so forth. So it just, it was nobody I could yell and scream at. It's made me even more angry.
Yeah, that's true. And that was, I mean, it would almost make it easier if there was somebody I could vent at somebody, you know, whose fault it was. But I was indoctrinated, and the people who indoctrinated me were indoctrinated. Everybody, I've said this before, but everybody I met in church circles were sincere in their belief. So, I mean, I really had nobody to get mad at, but oh boy, I was mad, which would, you know, my next piece of advice would be to vent responsibly. You probably don't want to go on Facebook right away. And, you know, this, I'm speaking from experience. This is exactly what I did. As soon as I was in that angry stage, I was like, I'm just going to tell everybody. I'm going to tell everybody that, you know, that they're wrong. And so I started just posting all kinds of stuff on Facebook, and, you know, I think that it's probably inevitable that I lost most of my friends anyway, because they were all, you know, we had nothing in common anymore, but I'm sure I hurt people by being so blatantly angry, you know, on social media. I wish I could take that back.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, Kara.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's on social media. I mean, it's hard to have a constructive conversation about almost anything, especially not something that's going to be that touchy and hit you know, so close to home for people. It's just, I can't figure out how to have an argument on there in any kind of productive way. So I'm like you, I just don't bother anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, I was also, I thought everybody would want to know this new thing that I found out. You know, I thought all of my old friends would love to know that they're believing a lie. I mean, I thought they were going to thank me, for God's sake. So, but no, not so much. So I've learned that, you know, people just got to get there themselves. There's some people, how do I say this? There's some people that I think it would be almost detrimental to them if they did realize that they've been believing a lie for so long. Some people are, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think some people are better off? I know what I went through when I became an atheist was very painful and confusing. And in a lot of ways, especially, you know, like, you know, our parents who, you know, have been in church for years or whatever, you know, I think it would be really hard for them to come out of it.
Well, and I mean, like you said, it's a process of grieving that you went through. So, I mean, it would be reasonable to expect that that's what other people might experience as well. So, yes.
Yeah, go ahead. It was disorienting to say the least. It was confusing and,
I recognized some distinct phases in my own kind of deconversion and sorting out where I was, and you've elicited them really well, and they all did pass. And they kind of passed with both time and knowledge. One of the things that I did when I immediately found myself with this foundation gone was reading and watching and listening to people who are kind of on the other side of this, and educating myself was just my tool or my coping mechanism. And it took, even though I'm really introverted and don't necessarily like to be around people, I really did. It did help me when I did find a secular community and like-minded people. Because like what you had said, your old community, you really didn't have anything in common with them anymore. And being alone, for extended periods of time and just in your thoughts is can be harmful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really true. And, you know, and that kind of leads me to my next point is that for me, a huge part of the process of my healing was giving myself permission to learn and to grow and to explore, especially the God claims and that kind of stuff, because the more I learned, well, for one thing, you know, the circles that I came out of, we would have been afraid to look at some of these things because we would be afraid that, you know, the devil was going to get us, basically. I mean, I just say it like that. We thought we'd fall into deception. So I never once in my life did I ever examine the evidence for the existence of God. No, I wouldn't have. Even if it crossed my mind, I would have been too afraid to do it. So that was one of the really great things, is being able to freely, you know, learn things and look at new ideas and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, isn't it interesting that they begin teaching? I mean, maybe not everyone, but in a lot of religious circles, they begin teaching at such an early age that questioning things is wrong. Don't think too hard about this. Yeah. That's how Satan gets you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I could just go on and on about the fear that is kind of baked right into, I guess I can't speak for all religions, but definitely baked into Christianity. I mean, you have to rub shoulders basically with other Christians. You can't forsake this. I hate quoting scripture, but I'm going to do it.
It's okay.
we used to say, well, you can't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Well, it wasn't until I came out of church, because I had left the church a few years before I became an atheist, and not for any reason other than the fact that I was really too busy to pastor anymore. And then we retired. That's another thing. We went from homeless to retired in 9 years. So don't feel too bad about me being homeless. We retired 9 years later with 7 properties. So wow. I do know what I speak of when I talk about starting over again, I think. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah. So it was only like when I got out of that bubble of, you know, because that's what it is. Church is like a bubble. You it's the same indoctrination over and over. The same things are regurgitated to you. Everybody around you speaks the same way and believes the same thing. And all your friends are, you know, so it wasn't until I got out, I forsake the assembling of myself together that I was able to actually start the process of deconstruction, you know, like topics like hell and that kind of stuff. But the learning part has been so much fun. I mean, it is like a great big world. I remember when I first became a Christian, I had a lot of questions because I've always been a learner. So I asked a lot of questions. Like I probably got on a lot of pastors' nerves. And I got told that I was a baby Christian. So, you know, these questions, you just put them aside for a while. But there's no such thing as a baby atheist. So, you know, go out and examine it. Look at it. I mean, you know, figure out why you believe what you believe and who believes what and what bases are there. I've been learning about epistemology. I mean, come on. That is fascinating. Don't you think? Do you guys watch Anthony Magna Bosco?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He was on RFRX a while ago, and he's a volunteer for RFR as well, and does some of the interviews for new volunteers. And what he's been working on is just fantastic. I've loved the Socratic method, and I like his modification to it. And it's so fantastic.
He's so calm. I don't know how he does it. I'd like to be able to bottle some of that, but I get way too passionate way too fast
in these conversations. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he said it took a lot of practice. So yeah, maybe man. There's hope for us all.
Yeah.
Kind of using his the Socratic method or street epistemology helped me ease out of that angry atheist phase as well. It helped me kind of calm down and slow down and began to just listen instead of assume, listen to where the other people are coming from instead of assume where they were coming from. And I learned a lot about other people as well, just slowing down and, but I wasn't at all able to do that when I was in my angry atheist phase.
No, I often wonder, I've never missed one of his shows. And I always wonder, what would I have said when I was like in the deep, you know, up to my eyeballs in it? What would I have said if somebody had asked me? I think, you know, I mean, there's no way to know, I suppose, but I think it probably would have blown my mind. I guess people have to be, it's good to give people questions, you know, make them think about it themselves. Uh-huh. And that's where I kind of stray from Anthony, because I'm a teacher basically. And I just want to tell you what you need to know, but
yeah, it's really hard to resist that urge. But how did that work for you, though? So when you did end up deconverting, was there a specific conversation or a moment that really resonated with you?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's such a boring story, oddly enough. I mean, it was a very casual conversation with my daughter, actually, and she's 31. And so her and her dad and myself, we were... am I allowed to say, listen, I'm Canadian and weed is legal here, so I'm just going to say, so we were smoking a joint and, we were just talking about all kinds of, I don't know, interesting, deep conversations, I suppose we were having. And she mentioned something about the simulation theory and I had never heard of it. But it was the first time that I ever heard of it's the first time I ever heard that it's possible that we could exist without a creator God. And that was all it took. That is literally all it took, is like, oh, because at that point I had deconstructed to the point where I knew nothing else. I knew I couldn't trust the Bible. And the only thing I had left really was, I know that there's a God, obviously, because we're here, and I know that he's good. So, you know, I went a couple of years like that until I had this conversation, and it was like a light came on. It's like, oh, wait a second. I had no idea that other people knew or thought that we could get here other than, you know, a creator. And that just kind of opened things up for me. And really, it seemed like everything fell into place for me. It all made sense. And then I started looking at the evidences for the supernatural and realize, yep, no, I was hoodwinked for 24 years.
Wow. That's so interesting. Yeah. All it took was like pulling that one string of,
Exactly. Yeah. The deconstruction part took years, like literally years. Mm-hmm. But that, that deconverting from that God belief, that pretty much happened almost overnight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds like you said, you'd been thinking about it, chewing on it a lot, probably in your head before that point. And that
all
was
of,
just...
Yeah. All of the finer points of religion I had always thought about. That's when I, you know, when I said that I was trying to be the best Christian that I could be, and I ended up as an atheist. And that's, you know, that is really what happened. But for the life of me, I don't remember a time in my life until that day that I ever considered that there may not be a God behind everything. It just didn't occur to me.
Yeah, well,
Catherine,
I don't think that's that unusual. Yeah. No,
they teach that.
And we're all indoctrinated. If you live in North America, you're indoctrinated to some point, to some extent. You can't turn on the TV, but, you know, you hear people talking about God bless and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah. Yeah.
Now, before you,
it's not all bad, because I have like a friggin' wonderful life now. It's been almost 4 years, and that whole learning, that is what helped me. Because here's the thing, for years, like I said earlier, my identity was, we used to call it in Christ. And we were really big on positive confession and stuff too. So, who I was somehow attached to this God figure that I worshiped. And when it was gone, I didn't know who I was. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. I didn't know my own morals, really. The morals I have now are so different than it was a few years ago, you know?
Yeah. Now, Catherine, before we move on, would you mind making the distinction between deconverting and deconstruction? Sure. Would you mind making that distinction?
Sure. Well, first I got to say, I got a flashback. I thought for sure you were just going to ask me to pray.
No.
Before we begin, let's all bow our heads.
Before we go any further, with every head bowed and every eye closed. I may not even be using these terms properly. I don't know. But for me, I've learned that I used to say that I deconverted or deconstructed from Christianity. But I've learned that to a lot of people, that means that they still have the God belief, but they're deconstructing their theology or their doctrine, basically. And I found that out the hard way, because I thought everybody who said that they were deconstructing was atheist like me. So, but no. And so that's why I started saying deconstruction and deconverting, because I did, the deconstruction part first and then deconverting to atheism. Although that sounds like too much, like, you know, you kind of, it's almost like before, like I got saved and converted to Christianity. It's not like that, but it's, I guess it's the best term that there is going out there. I don't like saying that I lost my faith, because I didn't lose a friggin' thing. I gained reason. I didn't lose anything.
Yeah. I kind of see it as like we have, when we're believers, we've constructed this whole worldview from day one until day when we no longer believe. And for me, the deconstruction part was when I was thinking about my old beliefs and then examining them, like, okay, is this, what can I do to make a determination on whether or not this belief is, has any hold in reality? Is it true or not? And the deconverting was then kind of like a whole shift in a belief system from religious to non-religious. And that's kind of the distinction I made, was like deconstruction was thinking about my old belief system. Deconverting was the actual shift between the two. Right, I don't know if that makes sense to you or not, but
yeah, it does completely. It does completely. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Well, and then someone in the chat was asking, so what is the reconstruction piece of it? What are you reconstructing there?
Well, my entire worldview has been reconstructed. Like I mentioned about morals, I didn't realize that my morals were not really my morals, if that makes sense. I just believed I had morals to believe the Bible, whatever the Bible says. So,
So you were saying like they weren't yours, like they were something that you just took on without thinking.
Yeah. Well, I was indoctrinated to believe. Well, for example, the Bible is not too fond of gay people. For many years, I believed that, that it was unnatural, it was a sin. And so that was my morals. But come to find out, I have no problem with it at all. I have no problem with it. It's, so there's so much that changed from it, but it really has been a reconstruction. But at the same time, it's also just learning to live. It's so hard to explain. I don't have to rely on an external source like the Bible or prayer or whatever. to come to my own conclusions, if that makes sense, to live my life.
Yeah.
I am free to live my life with my thoughts and my morals and my decisions. I get to go where I want to go and, you know, be friends with whoever I want to be friends with, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
And there's, in some sense, I feel like what you're describing, there's a bit of freedom in that too. Like when I was in my old religious system, it was inflexible. There wouldn't change at all, no matter how society changed, no matter how our culture changed. I couldn't change my morals or I couldn't change my worldview. But now that I'm out of it, I have the freedom to, while I'm deconstructing my belief system, I have the freedom to change my mind.
To have a say, that's big for me. Maybe just being as a woman, especially a woman who was in ministry. I mean, I played, you know, the boys game for a long time. I was the only friggin' woman in a lot of friggin' rooms for a long time.
When you told us you were an evangelical minister, how did you manage to pull that off, if you don't mind me asking? Because, like you said, it's a boys' club, and of course, they're not going to let you teach them.
It was, it certainly wasn't overnight. I mean, I became a Christian in 1996. And I started kind of in ministry right away. I started doing puppet shows and Sunday school. The puppet shows, first of all, I can't just gloss over the puppet shows because
you cannot.
Do you still have these puppets? Can we see
them? I wish I did. I so wish I did. There was one that was like a heart. That was a Holy Spirit. We had the devil. Anyway, I used to write the
puppets. Did you have like the Lamb of God shop?
We did. We did. But listen, of all of the things that happened to me in my Christian walk, I think doing the puppet shows with the kids was like, I'll never be sorry for that. I'll never regret that moment, because there's nothing like the pure joy of watching children who believe that puppet on your hand is actually friggin' talking to them. And it's so sweet. I started off very, very early in my Christian walk, and I started getting asked to speak at different places. And so, I've preached at women's ministries and conferences, lots of different churches, women's groups, that kind of thing. I even wrote Bible studies. I taught Bible studies. I was an associate pastor and a youth pastor, but boy, that senior pastor really, really was like a carrot on a stick for me for many, many years. It took a lot. I had to do, I did some Bible school, and I had to get like letters of reference and all that kind of stuff. I didn't get ordained until 2013 from 1996. The organization, the denomination that I was with was okay with ordaining women, which a lot of churches do. I mean, like the rest of the Bible, it's all open for interpretation, and a lot of churches do, interpret it a lot. I could give you the whole biblical lesson on why I was allowed to be a female pastor. I could back it up with scripture, but now I just don't care.
Yeah. And that's so interesting too, especially in like the evangelical and fundamentalist circles, where kind of the argument is that the Bible must be taken literally. Whatever it says is what we have to go by. But there's still so much room then for people to decide which passages to make say what they want, or something opposite of that. And which ones they decide are, no, that's the one we're definitely taking literally, and we're not going to discuss that.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true. And I mean, there's so many verses in the Bible that are really troublesome, but everybody manages to work their way around it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I had people leave the church when I got ordained, of course, but that was okay. And I wasn't really treated, probably shouldn't say this, but, you know, like my denomination would have pastors' meetings, but it would just be for the men. And I would get invited to the pastors' wives' meetings. And I'd be like, hello, you do know that I'm the pastor, right? But but that was okay. It was the culmination of everything that I had worked towards to become a pastor. I was beyond thrilled to do it. I never would have thought that just a few years later, I'd be an atheist.
So you had mentioned that you felt like you had lost time when you kind of began to this deconstruction, this deconversion process. How did you kind of deal with that? Like what, because I have some regrets and I know that I've caused some damage and I've tried to make up for it for doing this kind of work. What did you go through?
Yeah, the guilt is probably the guilt of some of the things that I believed or taught or said to people may always bother me. I do have a lot of regrets that way, especially when it comes to the gay people that I met along the way. I remember two separate times I tried to pray the gay away from a couple of men who were part of our congregation. And that makes me feel like it's just so disgusting now. But someone told me, I don't know who it was now, but someone told me just to keep focusing when I feel that guilt, to keep focusing on the intention that I had, because I was never a mean person. I was never a hateful person. I raised two gay kids myself. So my intentions were always loving. I was always sincere, but holy smokes, I was very sincerely wrong in a lot of those cases. And you know, I'll never be able to make up for those things. I did become a marriage commissioner since becoming an atheist, and I only do secular weddings. And I do any of the weddings in the gay community, I do for free. So that will never come near to like a drop in the bucket, even of telling one person. I regret telling even one person that was gay that it was wrong. But I enjoy doing the weddings for sure. But the learning about myself has been the best. I mean, it's like almost like seeing the world for the first time. Mm. I had a very, very strict view of things for so long. I never watched a horror movie, and I've discovered I love horror movies.
What's your favorite horror movie so far now that you've watched them?
There's two on Netflix called, I can't remember. I can't remember. That's my age.
Okay.
I'll remember it in about 10 minutes and I'll just blurt it out.
Yeah. In the middle. Hopefully it's something real weird sounding, so it won't make any sense until we realize that's what you're saying.
Now, I don't like horror movies with like demons, like the possession and those bore the shit out of me. Because I know it's not scary at all.
Did you ever do exorcisms? Were you ever involved in anything like that?
Oh yeah, deliverance. Yeah, that was like one of my main gifts was deliverance. I thought I delivered all kinds of people from all kinds of stuff.
Oh, tell us more. I want to hear about this.
Oh my goodness gracious. I've seen people throw up in church because, you know, we were doing deliverance and you just hand them a bucket. And we believe that sometimes you vomit out demons. Yeah. Hello, Glenda. I just woke up, Glenda. Look, she's like, what? It's true, Glenda. It's true. It's true. I thought we vomited up demons into the garbage can. I don't know what we did with them after.
Oh,
we
flushed them down the demons. You thought the demons came out with the vomit?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I always saw like this, the demons is like this ethereal thing that could just come in and out and pass through you like a cloud or something. I never considered them being able to come out in the vomit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or sneezing or coughing. We bleed off, all that kind of stuff. We were really, like, in Pentecostal circles, there's a demon behind everything. There's a demon everywhere. You got to watch where you're freaking sitting when you're Pentecostal, because you could sit right on a demon.
Yep.
Gone to people's homes. People have called me and said they were having trouble with their husband or their kid or whatever. And I would go to their home with my anointing oil and pray over their room and anoint the doorposts of the house. And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and how would you know?
It's so embarrassing. I'm sorry, Kara.
Oh no, I was just asking, how would you know if it had worked?
That's a good question. I guess if they threw up, no.
Okay, well, you know, then it helps to have a physiological indicator that something has happened.
Yeah, we used to just pray and pray and pray and pray. I mean, we were Pentecostal, so we prayed a lot. And, you know, usually, I don't know. I don't know how we would know it was done. I guess the shrieking and the screaming and the falling on the floor was over.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, we had that in my school, too, growing up, so I get it. And that was one of the ways that they would convince kids as well that, you know, this has to be true. Look at all of the demons that we've cast out.
Oh, my God, Kara, that reminds me of, oh, my Lord, oh, the regret. yeah, my daughter would have sleepovers. I remember one time in particular, she had a sleepover when she was little, and all of the girls, they were all from the church. They all thought they saw a demon. So, you know, here's mom to the rescue to come up. And I encouraged them. I said, okay, so you've seen a demon. It was nothing. I thought it was real. You know, when we prayed over it and stuff, and oh Jesus, wouldn't I wish I could go back in time and tell those poor little sweet girls to go to sleep that there's no demon out there.
Yeah.
Sounds so much like the beginnings of the Salem witch trials back in the 17th century, where these young girls thought they saw demons or, but this kind of really does go back to dealing with our own guilt and embarrassment of some of the damage we did, the stupid things that we did, the stupid thoughts we had that we thought were real back there. And and how do you kind of work through that?
I mean, my face probably went red when I was just saying that. That's how embarrassed I am now. Right. I know I'm an intelligent, educated, articulate human. You know, I wrote the entry exam for Mensa when I was 35, just for shits and giggles. So I'm not a dummy. And yet I have rolled on the floor and felt pains that I thought that we all said we were travailing in the spirit. You got, none of you know here. None of you know what that is.
No, we didn't have that. What is travailing in the spirit?
We believe that the Holy Spirit could birth something through you. And so you could get pains just like, stop looking at me like that, Kara.
I'm just imagining that scene in Alien when the chest burster comes out. And I was briefly horrified.
Yeah, no, it's true. As embarrassing as it is, it's that is 100% true.
Yeah. You know, that's such an important point, though, that you bring up that, you know, it doesn't mean that someone is stupid because they have a religious belief. Like anybody who's deconverted, you know, you kind of have to recognize that, okay, I was fooled by this for whatever reason. You know, it's not an intellectual disability, you know, that we're dealing with. There's a lot more going on than that. And that probably goes a lot towards, you know, being able to get out of that angry atheist stage as well, perhaps. Having
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
I wonder if the part of the angry atheist phase that I went through was a reaction to some of the regret and the guilt that I had too. I'm wondering if there was a little bit in there or a lot in there as I was kind of working through it myself.
Yeah. For sure, because, I mean, like we said earlier, there's really nobody to be mad at. I mean, I think it's funny that people think I'm mad at God. I mean, I wish I was just mad at God. I'm just not. And to speak to what Kara was just saying, I hear a lot of people, a lot of atheists now refer to Christians or other theists as, you know, stupid, basically. And it's just not true. I didn't get any smarter when I became an atheist. I just started thinking differently. So it really isn't a function. Even I do find that when people find out that I am from like a fundamental background, that carries more of a stigma of not being very smart. So outrageously strange, I suppose.
Having a belief in something has nothing to do with intelligence, as you so well put it. I feel one of the traps that I fell into early in my deconversion process was thinking I could logically talk someone out of their belief system that they got into in an emotional basis, and just never worked. And it was a tilting at windmills trying to use logic and reason to talk to someone out of their beliefs with they got into it emotionally.
And when I came out of the angry atheist stage, I suppose, or at some point, I just really embraced learning. And that's probably the best advice I could give anybody who's coming out of religion, or especially like, you know, the high control, high demand religion that I came out of, is explore the world. It's such a big, beautiful world. I am shocked at how small my world was for 2 decades.
Wow.
Very, very small. Yeah. And there are, I mean, I joke about whiskey, but I mean, that's just so, it's so bigger than that. You know, it's bigger than whiskey and horror movies. And it is about freedom and excitement. And I only have one life to live. I'm 53, and by God, I'm going to live it the best that I can. If everybody's on board and everybody is happy and I'm not hurting anybody, I'm going to try whatever I want to do. I want to experiment life. I want to experience life. I want every day to, I want to squeeze out every bit of goodness out of every day. I don't have a heaven to go to. I don't have a heaven to go to when I'm dead. This is it. This is my life. Right. And mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that reminds me of, you know, when I was in, you know, Pentecostal school, you know, all of the time they would tell us these things, you know, you're not allowed to do anything. You know, everything is, we're boycotting Disney, we're boycotting 7-Eleven, you know, everything we're boycotting all the time. And, you know, then they would have these services where they would talk about things like, oh, well, you know, if you're ever feeling like your life is boring or you need more excitement in your life or more freedom to do things, that's an indication that your conscience is telling you that you need to get closer to Jesus. And I never got what that meant, because it just never made sense to me. But then after leaving the religion, I realized, oh no, we just actually were missing out on all of those things.
Yeah. We used to be almost terrified of the world. You know, that's what it was called. We called it the world. We couldn't be worldly. And almost, it almost sounds like I was, you know, wearing a bonnet and a long dress or something. It wasn't that bad, but at the same time, it kind of was, you know, it kind of was, I was told who I am, what I believe, what my morals are, what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, finding out that none of that is relevant anymore is actually very freeing. Yes, it was the most painful thing that I've ever gone through. And it really is the most, and like I said, I've been homeless. I've suffered depression. I've been through a lot in my life. But deconverting from Christianity was the hardest, but the most rewarding. I wish I had never gotten involved in it, but I wish that I had found reason a lot earlier than I did.
I don't feel that we can really have appreciation or even elation if we never experience sadness or heartbreak or the tough times. It's kind of shitty to say, well, it made you stronger. But on the other hand, if you hadn't have gone through what you've gone through, if I hadn't have gone through what I've gone through, I could not have helped. I don't feel like I could have been as effective or empathetic to the people that I talk to that are struggling and to come out of it and have their own doubts and stuff. Yes, it was traumatic. Yes, there were people who also had been through that that helped me. And now I get to turn around and be the one for them or be one of them for those folks too.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah.
The way you had painted how you saw the world or how you were told to see the world with demons in the basement the children were seeing or demons coming in when you're sneezing or coughing and coming out when you're vomiting. Like I was getting afraid. That is a scary, scary world. And when you kind of came out of it, was it difficult for you to embrace or try new things? Because it sounds like you might have still experienced the world as being super scary.
I did not, actually. Once I got through therapy for religious trauma syndrome, which, you know, I definitely needed. Once I got through that, I actually lost fear. Like, I used to be afraid even to be in the house by myself. Or spend the night by myself. I was really afraid of demons. I mean, you could see them at any time, for goodness sake, you know? Not even just the fear of hell, but like all of those fears are gone now. I really live in the woods. This is my window there. It is black right there, black. You know, I could go outside. I'm not afraid that demons are going to come and, you know,
that's cool.
Crawl out of the ground and grab me or something. And I wasn't afraid to try new things. I have had 4 years of trying all kinds of new things. Some of them I can't even tell you, Eric.
we talk about a lot on this show.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Well, you kind of want to feel like you can summarize some of the tips that you tossed out throughout this conversation, just in a little bit of a conclusion. And why don't you summarize that?
Yeah, sure. I would say the first thing is to realize that, especially if you're coming out of something as deep as I was, that it is a process and you're going to have to do some work. You know, but it is so much worth. It is so worth it. So there is a process. Being aware, being cognitive that there's a process, and that is very similar to grieving, will actually help you be a lot gentler on yourself. You know, and so there's that. And then give yourself permission to learn. Give yourself permission to learn all of those religious things that you weren't allowed, because I found that the more I learned, the more confident I was that I'm not wrong now, if that makes sense. I've been 4 years basically talking about God and asking people for their proof. And the more I do, the more I realize I feel pretty good about my standing in life, you know? So give yourself permission and then explore. Just have fun, find out who you are, explore things. I mean, I took up all kinds of hobbies. I took up painting. I never painted in my whole life. Darts, I mean, just little things, but those kinds of things too will help you with your new social circle, because 9 chances out of 10.
Oh, that's a fantastic point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fantastic point.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so important to me too. Just other things to do with other humans. And
yeah,
you know, things like this too, but
absolutely.
But yeah, that's absolutely a good point. I think there are probably a lot of people who don't want to leave just because they don't want to risk losing that connection and that community. but
well, I was told, I always believed that atheists were depressed, hopeless, sad, purposeless individuals. And so that would keep somebody, I would imagine that would keep somebody, but that is just a lie. It is so not the truth. I have more to live for now than I did as a Christian, because as a Christian, I could waste a lot of time because I had all of eternity. And, you know, now I got this one.
What such an incredible shift for me too, thinking that there was an afterlife to now realizing that there wasn't. And like before I had my deconversion process, I'm like, oh, someone may need to push the reset button on this guy. And so they can either go to heaven or get reincarnated or whatever the heck goes on. But now saying something like that for me just kind of gives me the shivers. I'm like, no, Eric, that's awful to say. That's wrong, because this is all that we've got. And life became so much more precious to me than it was before. And I look at the stupid things that we're doing, humanity is doing in the name of religion, and the lives that are just wasted, and it makes me sad, and it pushes me to make the most out of my life as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna just tell you this one short little story. One of the very last times I went to church, I was visiting a church because it was in a different province from where I was pastoring. And they had a piece of string tied from one end of the sanctuary to the other. That's a fairly big sanctuary. And somewhere at the beginning of that, they had this tiny little, not even a sticky note, but you know, the little sticky tabs that you use, like when you need to sign a document, on the string that stretched across. And the whole message was, that little sticky note is your life, and the rope is eternity. What you need to do is suffer. Well, I don't know if they didn't use the word suffer, but you sacrifice and you do, you know, everything on that little tiny sticky note that determines your whole life. And it's not, it's just not like that. Life is so, I don't even know the words. It feels like whole new life opened up to me. And you don't even realize it. You don't realize it when you're in it. We used to sing a lot about being free. I mean, we used to like jump around and dance and clap in church and talk about how free we were. Hallelujah. But it's so restrictive. You know, I don't know how you can, well, I guess I do. You're indoctrinated, but now life is beautiful.
I think in some sense, and maybe for some people, there is freedom inside that cage. Like you may feel protected from the scary outside world, but once that cage door is opened and you kind of walked out, like the world is so much more, it's so much bigger and so many more possibilities. It's weird to say this, but the world also became brighter to me, like more exciting, and the colors seem to be shifted to be just more beautiful than it was before. It's weird, totally weird, unexpected, as you well put it beforehand.
I found that I had a new appreciation for nature, because I didn't have to attribute it to a God. You know what I mean? I have a new appreciation for humans. I realize that I am a part of a human species. And for so many years, I was in a us and them kind of mindset. That's what Christianity does, right? You're a sinner or a saint. You're lost or you're saved. You're going to heaven. You're going to hell. Everybody was a project to me. And now I don't have that. I see people for who they are. Like, everybody has their own shit they're going through, right? Everybody has ups and downs and, you know, hurts and joys. Everybody is the same. We're all, you know, and we're all connected. There's, you know, there is no us and them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Catherine, thank you so, so much. This has been a great conversation, and I'm really glad to have had this topic about rebuilding and kind of what to expect when you don't expect coming out deconverting. Before we kind of move on to the Q&A, do you have any final thoughts or final words?
No, but again, I thought you were going to ask me closing prayer that time. No, I don't have any questions, but I'm thrilled to have been here, and I'm really looking forward to if anybody has any questions for me.
Well, before we move on, it's been 13 years since you kind of first started doubting the existence of God, and you still have these initial reactions of like, you're going to pray. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, it hasn't really been 13 years. But listen, as a pastor, you know that if you are in any kind of public situation, you're going to get asked to pray.
Okay.
And yeah, every meeting, every meal, every potluck.
I think that maybe something else that people might not expect is to have these kind of old ingrained reactions to certain situations or certain phrases. Like, it took me a long time to break out of that habit of saying God bless you, or even bless you when somebody sneezes. Sure, you can say it, but that just doesn't make sense to me anymore. If I was a Pentecostal, I think it would make perfect sense.
Yeah, now we know that's
someone,
how the demons
someone
get
messaged
in.
Me. Oh, sorry, Kara.
Oh no, I just said that's how the demons get in, so it makes a lot more sense now.
It's true. Actually, no. The demons get in by your own fault.
Yeah.
Everything bad that happens is your fault. Everything good that happens is God's fault. That's another thing that I've learned, is that it's amazingly wonderful to be able to take credit for your own victories and achievements, you know.
Yes, that's so true. Because it is like you said, there's no shortage of people saying, you know, you must have a sin in your life. Even if you don't know what it is yet, nobody knows what it is. There must be a sin you're doing, you know, if anything goes wrong. But yeah, you're right. You can't take credit for it.
I heard a sermon one time, and this preacher was saying that you can't expect God to anoint you and use you if your car is dirty. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of pressure.
That's the thing. There's always, it's exhausting, because you always have to be introspective, you know. But I'm getting off on another topic now.
Catherine,
before I start preaching again.
Catherine, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Thank you so much. Carrie, you want to take the questions and start us off? If you've got some questions for Catherine, both here in Zoom or in the Discord, we're monitoring both of those places, so feel free to ask them there.
Yeah, and so we have had a few questions come in so far, so I'll start with those. One person was wondering, was it hard to tell your family that you had become an atheist? And
yes. When
did you decide to let them know that?
Yeah, it was very hard to tell my family. Luckily, my husband and I deconverted at the same time. That's a whole new level of hurt that other people have that I never had. Sorry, what was your question again, Karen?
Oh, yeah, no, that's okay.
Yes.
Was it hard to tell your family?
It was. I sent my family, like my family, and we have like a family chat, right, on Messenger. We've had for years. So that's where I dropped that bomb, because I thought it would be easier to just say, okay, here's this thing that happened to me. I don't believe in God anymore, but I really don't want to talk about it. And really nobody talked about it. To this day, I have not had very many people that I've met in my ministry in the years of being a Christian. Not very many people have asked me what happened. So I didn't really have a whole lot like that to face. I did have, like, you know, one lady just found out recently, and she messaged me and said, I can't believe that you're doing that, and I'll never leave. I'll never turn my back on my Lord, and you know, that kind of thing. But
wow. But as far as your immediate family, that it wasn't, they weren't particularly shocked or upset by it.
No, my, my kids were all adults. I have three grown kids. They were atheists before me. Like I said, my daughter is kind of the one who was kind of the, you know, the person who I had the conversation with. So now that's not to say that we haven't had our issues, because my kids were raised in a very strict home. You know, so this is very new to them. It's been a lot to work through there as well. But they didn't feel betrayed, you know, by my lack of faith in God anymore. And so I don't think there were too many people to really be that upset. I know that probably most people are just like really shocked. People who know me are shocked, but not, I don't think anybody's been really, really hurt by it. I shouldn't say that. I, you know, my dearest and closest best friend for 20 something years, you know, that whole friendship has completely changed. So I suspect that, you know, it's hurtful to her. I led a lot of people, you know, to the Lord, and then to turn around and say, hey, you know, that thing I said back then. Yeah. Forget that. So, yeah.
And that's, I don't know. It sounds like almost like it could have been a scary situation in almost the opposite direction. Like, were you afraid that there would be people saying, I told you so, we've been telling you this for years?
I genuinely expected, I did expect more of a pushback from people, but at the same time, in that angry atheist stage, I kind of burned bridges with pretty much anybody, you know. I mean, I took anybody who was a Christian, I took off Facebook at some point, you know.
Yeah.
I just, because I couldn't, there was a time when I couldn't stomach seeing, you know, the Christian stuff coming up on people's news feeds. So as soon as I saw it, I would just like delete. But yeah, it really, you know, it really hasn't, other than the fact that my entire social circle has changed. I wouldn't say that most people were, you know, angry over it.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's great.
We've got another, seems to be fairly Pentecostal based. Number one, did you ever speak in tongues? And number two, ever handle snakes?
Well, listen, you cannot be Pentecostal if you don't speak in tongues. That's the whole friggin' thing. So yes, it was one of the, that was another one of my main gifts was I taught on the baptism of the Holy Spirit and speaking in tongues, and even in other churches. I've written Bible studies on it. And yeah, the snake handling was never, I think that's more of an American Pentecostal thing.
Yeah, I think it's Southern.
Yeah.
Yeah, no snakes up here in Newfoundland anyway, so.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's
Did St. Patrick drive him out of Newfoundland too?
Yeah, probably.
That's great. Okay, we've got another one here. Someone was wondering, did you always buy into the belief 100%, or was there something at the back of your mind that kind of said, something doesn't seem quite right, but I'm just going to go along with it anyway?
Right. That's a really great question. And I can say without a doubt that I believed it hook, line, and sinker. You know, there may have been doctrinal points that I wasn't really kind of sure about, like hell was always never really sat well with me, because I couldn't figure out why, if God loves us so much, why he would do that. But you know, as far as like everything I preached, I believed 100%. And I did, I believed it all. I don't think there was ever a time, other than, like I said, just some doctrinal points, but no, I thought I was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
oh, go ahead.
It's I really never even took the time to examine it. Like, of course I'm right. I've seen proof of it, and of course all the people who are my senior have told me it's true. And so why would I doubt them? It never really occurred to me to doubt. I asked questions, but and those questions started to be weirder and weirder. But in the thick of it, no, I was sailing on what other people told me.
Yeah, I was fully indoctrinated, and it's like you said. I mean, there were a lot of wonderful, loving, intelligent people, and for a lot of times, you know, when I was at the very beginning stages, when I was a Christian, a baby Christian, I kind of would think to myself, well, this doesn't make sense to me, but these people obviously know what they're talking about. I mean, they've gone to school, they're talking about it. So eventually I will understand it. And so that's how I quelled my questions for a long time, you know, and they were mostly like questions like, how did Jonah really live in a whale for, you know, 3 days and then end up right there at Nineveh where he's supposed to preach, you know, things like that. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. All right, we got two more questions here. I'm going to read this one kind of verbatim for you. The theology I had was very focused on God making everything right at the end, whether at the end of time or just conceptually in the afterlife. I'm finding it hard to replace that old hope based on magic with something based in reality. What advice would you give this person?
Oof, interesting. That is really great. I don't know. I feel more hopeful about the future now than I did, you know, when I felt that Jesus was in control of it all, because I think, you know, maybe you do feel like you need to, what am I trying to say here? Eric, read the question again.
So I can really, really relate to this question. When I was a believer, I could feel like this horrible person is doing horrible things to someone I care about or someone in the world. And I'm powerless to do something about it. But I know a guy who knows a guy, and they'll be able to take care of this. It was almost like there was this ledger book, and it was always being kept in balance in some way, like this person will get it in the end, or the horrible things that are going on are only temporary because this is part of a plan, and it's going to be okay in the end. So, and leaving that belief system, I now see that it's just us, and these are horrible people doing horrible things to innocent people, and I'm still powerless to do anything about it in most cases. How do you, or how would you advise someone to deal with that and work through that?
I think for me, like just looking at things logically, taking a rational stand, which is a big deal for me, because I went, you know, to prayer for, you know, every situation. But knowing that I have a say in the direction of my life actually gives me hope. Because yes, it might be nice to have God as a crutch who's going to work it all out in the end. But at the same time, that same God then is still, in charge of your life kind of thing, you know? I think being able to think things through myself and use my own common sense has actually given me confidence, which, you know, in turn is hopeful for the future, because I didn't know that I could do these things. And as far as, you know, people doing terrible things, well, God's not going to fix it. It's up to us as humans to get involved and fix things, and, you know, to be socially active and, you know, and that kind of thing. So leaving it up to God is, not going to get the job done. So I hope that
makes sense. And in some sense, I feel like in the past, I would pass the responsibility on to somebody else. Like, okay, it's not my problem. I'll just let this supernatural being kind of take care of it. And that sort of mentality sort of seeped into a lot of my everyday life where it's not my responsibility. I can just send back, even if I can do something about it. Once I came out of the old belief system, it was really hard to square the idea that there is a plan, and then also the idea that there's a free will, that we have free will. Because if there's a plan, then my life is on rails. But if there's free will, then I can kind of have a say in the outcome. And so looking at back and holding those two thoughts in my head at the same time, was just something that I think a lot of believers do going around in the world.
But finding out that you can be a good person without a God belief, or that you can make intelligent decisions, you can handle your own shit, basically, you can handle your own life, is a very empowering feeling. I mean, Christianity, yeah, in a lot of ways makes us very, can make us very childish, you know, I mean, but yeah, for me, I found that it was almost like growing up. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain growing up at 50, but, you know, I really love knowing that I am in control of my life and that I can be a decent, moral, good person without God.
I do like your analogy with being children, because that's exactly what we would do. Is as a kid, I would my parents would take care of stuff, and I wouldn't necessarily, yes, I'd get in trouble for doing some crappy things, but my parents would, for the most part, take care of my basic needs. And if something came up in my life, they would be the ones that I could fall back on, and they would take care of it for me. So I do really like that analogy, because I felt the same way when I, as an adult and as a believer.
Yeah. Yeah, especially this kinds of things that I believed. I mean, like I said, childish is not the right word, but it is so unbelievable that it almost makes you feel like, you know, well, I mean, I was deluded for a long time. You know, that's hard to accept. But I'd never go back. I'll never go back. I can't imagine, you know. I guess if somebody, if somebody could convince me, if somebody could show me that there's a God, I mean, I don't know if I'd ever go back to church, but, and I don't know if I would ever give control of my life to that God again, yeah. But, you know, I mean, if it's true, I'd certainly love to find out, and then I can make a decision with my own brain about what I'm going to do with that information.
And in some sense, this childlike behavior or view that we had, it's would contribute to rediscovering the world anew as we come out of it. Because you described how you were exploring new things and felt like the world was all brand new. And as a support group leader, being able to meet with people every month or so, I get to see the same thing in so many people. I'll never forget a woman who came in and was heavily indoctrinated into a cult. And after a few weeks of being there, she comes in and is like, I wore pants for the first time today. And I tried pepper for the first time today. This stuff is amazing. I got to kind of see the world anew through her eyes too. And it was really uplifting for me. And I kind of was along for her ride too. It was really neat to see people rediscover the world.
Yeah. It's too bad that, you know, in 2021, there are still people who think that eating pepper is, you know, sinful. I can't laugh at it, because I believe that people were vomiting up demons into the garbage of the church. But more and more people, I think it's, you know, with the resources and information that we have available now. When I became a Christian, we personally didn't have internet. There was no such thing as YouTube. I couldn't look up, you know, things. But in this day and age, there's a lot of great resources out there. And if people could step away from the fear of getting deceived, you know, to really be able to examine things, it's just such a much more full life, a much bigger life.
Yeah. And on that note, we have one more question. We actually have several more questions, but we'll try and keep ourselves on track this time. And I'll just ask you one more question about sort of expanding our horizons into new things. Someone was wondering if you have any suggestions for meeting non-religious people, besides obviously at RFR, once you've come out of that situation.
Yeah, that's the thing where I am. That's very difficult. Well, first of all, I live in a town with maybe 50 people. So I can guarantee you my husband and I are the only atheists here.
Wow.
And, you know, so if somebody's in a bigger city, there are lots of secular meetup groups and stuff to do. I find most of my community online. Just because of where I live. I mean, I would love to be able to, you know, meet in person with people. Finding new interests and hobbies and stuff and getting out there and doing stuff. I think that would come, you know, kind of flows out of that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if you pick a hobby that you wouldn't have been allowed to do previously, maybe you're more likely to meet other like-minded people.
Yeah. You know, it's hard finding friends when you're a middle-aged woman and not a kindergartner is very difficult. It took a concerted effort. Listen, people probably thought I was weirder looking for friends than I was coming out of religion. Because I was shameless. for friends.
That's great.
I have you don't have like a little notepad that says, will you be my friend? Yes, no, maybe. And like
circle one.
Yeah.
But you know where, I was in is this unique position that, people who knew me from my old life, you know, I was now a heathen, but then, you know, the other people still saw me as religious. So it was like one of my closest friends now, I just friggin' love her. I went to high school with her. So I tried hanging out with her when we moved back here so many times and she was having none of it. And I couldn't, you know, it was a little bit hurtful. And then one time we were, my husband and I stopped into a local bar and had a beer. And again, being Canadian, we're allowed to smoke weed here. Her boyfriend saw me, you know, being all sinful and stuff. So he went to her and said, hey, they're not religious anymore. And so we got together and now she's like one of my best friends ever. And she tells me, she used to say, you used to keep inviting me down, but I knew you were religious and you would just think I was crazy.
So I'm hearing that your testimony is still important now. You just have to change it up a little bit.
Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, Catherine, again, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to move on to the conclusion, but if you have a little bit of time, I know it's really late out there in Newfoundland, but if you have a little time, we have a hangout session afterwards, and yeah. You can stay for as long or as little as you'd like. I think there's some folks here who would love to express how your story has kind of touched them and ask you some follow-up questions or something.
Well, cool. No, I'm definitely going to, I had a coffee earlier, so I'm good until.
Excellent.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.
You know what it's like to journey out of a once-cherished belief. Maybe you were devoutly religious, escaped a cult, or perhaps you simply navigated out of some very difficult days, and now you'd like to help someone else do the same. Recovering from Religion is a wonderful support organization for people who feel confused, troubled, and alone as they come to grips with the possibility that they no longer hold a religious belief, or that they risk losing everything if they're honest with themselves and others about their journeys. These people need our help, and Recovering from Religion needs yours. RFR is seeking volunteers. Perhaps you're formerly religious, or you have a specific skill set like speaking a foreign language. Maybe you're just a good listening ear. The RFR Volunteer Training Program will help you translate those abilities into critical assistance, encouragement, and support for the men, women, and youth who contact RFR every day from all over the world. You can relate. You can understand. And you can make their journeys easier. Join the team at Recovering from Religion and remind someone else that they are not alone and someone is here to help. To find out more, click the Volunteer tab at recoveringfromreligion.org.